Ready? Okay. I'm going to call to order the meeting and right at 6 o'clock. And we're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm going to ask Councilmember Thomas to lead us. And if you'd remove your cover and stand, appreciate it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember Thomas. Roll call.
Councilmember Davis.
Present.
Councilmember Davini.
Here.
Councilmember Fiebig.
Present.
Councilmember Thomas.
I'm here.
Councilmember Mulgrew.
Present.
Councilmember Moore.
I'm here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is public comment. And this is an area of the meeting where any item that is not currently on the agenda tonight, you're free to speak at the podium. If you'd state your name when you come up. And what we'll do is, I don't have any speaker cards, so if you do and want to speak as a public comment, you do have one. We'll go to the room first, and then we'll go online for anybody that might be online. Do we have any callers online?
No.
Okay, let's go to the room first then. First speaker?
Officer Rodriguez.
Can you hear me? Hello? No? Screen? It's green? Yep. Okay. So I'm Officer Daniel Rodriguez with CHP Hayward. I am filling in for Officer Jennifer Papp today. She's on vacation. We're going to go over some stats from CHP Hayward for May. Citations, we had 352 citations, 9 DUI arrests, 0 felony arrests, 2 other misdemeanor arrests, 18 injury crashes, 40 non-injury crashes, 0 recovered stolen vehicles, and vehicle storages were 20. Our past events, on June 7th, we had our maximum enforcement day where speed was the primary focus. CHP Hayward led the state in enforcement contacts that day. Our ongoing enforcement is we are continuing our partnership with ACSO, San Leandro PD, Hayward PD, with the RESET program, which is the Regional Sideshow Enforcement Test Unit. Our partnership has continued to be successful in preventing sideshows within the Southern Alameda County. Our COPS focus has been on homeless encampments along the freeway and clearing the freeway right away as well, and patrolling school zones by our Special Enforcement Unit. Our upcoming events on August 5th is National Night Out. I know Officer Jennifer Papps is seeking locations, so if anyone has any ideas or locations of where they want CHP, please reach out to her so we can start making our plans. On June 17th, from 10 a.m. to 12 a.m., we're going to have our AgeWell class at Lake Elizabeth. And then on June 24th, we're going to have our Start Smart class at CHP Hayward from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. For any reckless driving complaints, email us at 345recklessdriving@chp.ca.gov or call our office at 510-489-1500 to speak with our watch officer and utilize our traffic complaint log. That is it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. I'm sure Officer Papps would be very happy with your presentation. Is there any way that we can kind of see and tell whether the volume at the podium is loud enough without, does it come up on the screen or anything like that? Like you see a barcode or, okay. I was just wondering with the new system, they're a little bit shorter and you kind of, they're far away from folks, but okay. I'll just make sure I have it real close. Okay, do we have anybody online for the 3 minutes?
Of no online speakers.
Is there anybody else in the room for 3 minutes? Public comment. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public comment portion of the meeting, and we're going to move on to the approval of the minutes from May the 19th. Everybody had an opportunity to review them?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes of May 19th, 2025.
I'll second that.
Great. No changes? Discussion? Okay, perfect. Roll call for the minutes, please.
Councilmember Davis?
Aye.
Councilmember Davini?
Aye.
Councilmember Fiebig?
Aye.
Councilmember Thomas?
Abstain. I wasn't here.
Councilmember Mulgrew?
Aye.
Councilmember Moore?
Yes.
Minutes approved.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda this evening is something we've been excited to hear, particularly in Yerna Canyon lands, is an update from Alameda County Fire and Evacuation Management or Emergency Preparedness presentation. And are you ready? What we'll do here is, if you don't mind, we'll do the presentation, and then I'll go to public comment if there's anybody online or in the room, and then we'll go to the staff here for questions or comments. Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me? Testing, testing, good? Okay, good. So good evening, everyone. My name is Lincoln Cashmere. I'm the Emergency Preparedness Manager for Alameda County Fire Department. I'll be standing in for Division Chief Jeff Lukey. Couldn't be here today. And also on the phone, we have Deputy Chief Derek Thomas. So I'll give the presentation, and then if you guys have any questions, or I can answer those, or if anything comes up, any operational type questions, Deputy Chief Thomas can answer those for you, okay? All right, so we're going to talk a little bit around evacuation management, preparedness, our preparedness courses, as well as where to get information, right? A lot of times we have these conversations when people ask about evacuation, they hear, tell us our route, which way do we go, right? And these situations are dynamic, so it's never like a set way to go. So this is how we kind of present this in terms of here's what may happen, here's the things that we tend to see, and then here's how you can stay informed so we can make informed decisions. And then here's where you go for those resources so you know which way to go, okay? So we just start with this slide in terms of disasters can take many forms. Civil unrest, earthquake, flooding, heat wave, pandemic, terrorism, wildfire. We seem to get the 100-year disaster every year now, right? We get the 100-year fire, we get the 100-year storm. So we start to prepare a little differently now, right? We know disasters can be man-made or natural disasters, right? We also have personal emergencies that could come up, health crises, broken down vehicles, loss of housing, mental health breaks. They can run the gambit, right? So we just start there to start to level set in terms of things. There are these things that we can do that cut across all disasters, all situations, okay? So the first thing we talk about is where do we get information from, right? So we start with some apps that people can have on their phone that are really informative, where you can get a lot of information. So Pulse Point follows our dispatch. So you can see calls that go out as someone calls 911 and those calls go up, you'll see that notification there in Pulse Point. You can actually listen to the radio traffic there, right? So for those that are interested in that. We also have our MyShake app, which is a state app, Cal OES app. That looks at earthquake early warning, right? So, and that's kind of like a crowdsourcing type of app where the more people have it, the more advanced warning you could potentially get. They say anywhere from like 3 seconds to like 20 seconds, maybe, depending on how close you are to the epicenter. But if you've been through an emergency like that or an earthquake like that, 20 seconds feels like plenty of time, right? Like there's plenty of time to get into a doorway or get into a safe position, right, from falling objects. And then this other one we have up here is Watch Duty. Watch Duty is a great app. It looks at taking a collection of information from multiple sources, right? So like PG&E, the fire department, the police department, these various responder type agencies, and collects all of the information and puts it there, right? So you can see kind of updates happening in real time They post pictures up there from like the hillside cameras so you can get those views of what's going on in real time. Okay. So this slide is about notifications. We're going to stay along the information line. So definitely we're always going to plug our website. We'll always have our most updated information on there through our public information officer, our public affairs managers, running our Twitter feeds and our social media feeds and making sure all our information is up. Alameda County AC Alert is another great one. We always encourage everyone to sign up for that. Information goes out no matter what the disaster may be across the county. You can sign up. You don't have to sign up for the entire county. You can sign up just for where you live or just for where you work or you have relatives or family just to get those alerts for that particular area, right? So I do that. For example, I might sign up for my job, my house, and my children's school, for example, right? PG&E is always putting information up for the public safety power shutoffs. Fortunately, we don't get those as frequently as we used to in the previous few years, but they would definitely post that information there. And then emergency radio, 1610 AM, as well as subscribing for the local Nixol alerts through the text messages. Okay, so here's the software that we would use for evacuations, right? So this evacuation is called Genesis. There's two versions of this. There's a Genesis Evac, which is what the first responders would use, and there's the Genesis Protect, which is what the public-facing side of that, right? That barcode can open up that website, or you can just go to the website that's listed on the slide deck, plug in your address, sign up to receive the notifications for your address. So in this screenshot right here is what that actually looks like on our side. So the whole county is broken up into these individual zones. Lots of conversations were had about how to size those zones, the number of people in any particular zone, day and nighttime population, number of structures, number of cars. All of that was taken into consideration when the zones were created with fire as well as with law enforcement. And if there was any kind of disaster or anything that required an evacuation, we would definitely put things out through Genesis. This formerly used to be called Zone Haven. You might have heard about it before. A few years ago when it first came out, the county was doing a big push of Know Your Zone. It was called Zone Haven. Now it's called Genesis Protect. Okay. So when a zone goes up on here, it would change colors, right? So there's three different stages. There's evacuation notification, right? So to turn red, there's evacuation warning, which is yellow, and there's evacuation advisory, which will kind of just gray out a little bit. And in that app, once a notification goes out, you'll see this road is closed, stay off this way, go this way, traffic control points, temporary evacuation point, all that kind of information will be listed there, with another link to AC Alert because there's just limited characters that you can use within this device. Okay. Say that again? Oh, pulling it up. Pull it up right now. Put it on your phone. So this is how it looks like on my side of this system, right? So this would be the evac side. So the unified, if there was an evacuation, so we had to do an evacuation, it wouldn't be just the fire department on its own just saying we need to get people out of here. And we would go into what's called unified command. And that is where we would team with law enforcement who has ultimate responsibility for evacuations, as well as any other agency that might make sense to be in unified command. But essentially we would be making that decision jointly, okay? So the decision gets made to evacuate the zones. What it looks like is that slide over there on the left where the zone is turned, is highlighted up there. So you know you're selecting one zone, or I could be selecting multiple zones. We can change the status of a zone. Each zone can have its own individual status. So say like this zone one is in evacuation, the neighboring zone two is in advisory, right? So I can do all of that in real time, put in those information. I'll be plugging in the information and then hit send and it goes out to the public facing side. And that's what will pop up on your phone. Okay, so that's the first step. The second step is the information relay. So how it kind of goes out. So once we change that zone, it will notify through Nixol, so that alert automatically goes out. Waze, which is a great app also to have on your phone. It's great for traffic, but also Waze works with Genesis to redirect traffic out of the area should there be an evacuation, right? So say this happened at 5 o'clock and we know people are trying to beat traffic around the freeway or the streets or whatnot, they're not flooding into a zone that we're also trying to get everyone out of. So Waze automatically adjusts and will keep people out of the area. And then again, watch duty. That information gets uploaded there. So that's what I was saying earlier in terms of watch the duty is collecting from multiple sources. And then step three is the notification. So it's out to the public. And that's where we have the awareness level up there. So it went from green of nobody knowing what to do or kind of confused about what's going on. Have you heard? Have you seen? To now we have a fully informed public where we're over here in the red in terms of notifications. And then the graphic, of course, evacuation traffic, but that's what we're trying to mitigate, right? So cut back on that. So we tend to start here. How do we start a preparedness journey? So we're here today. We're talking today for those that are online. They're here today to hear, get some information and know where to find information. So that's step one. Step two, we talked about being informed and signing up for alerts. So just knowing where to get information from. Step three, we have on here for get or make your go bags. We always push the go bags just so you never know what's going to happen. People can have go bags in multiple locations. They can have multiple go bags. We talk about that, having something in your car, having something at home, wherever you spend the most amount of time. So we talk about the go bags, making a plan and practicing it, right? A plan does no good sitting on a shelf, right? It does no good talking about it once when it was hot and now the disaster happened on a rainy day and it was, you know, the situation is not the same. So we talk about make a plan, practice it. And then the next step in terms of get PEP trained, that's personal emergency preparedness. That's what that stands for. We do those classes pretty frequently. So in my role, I manage all of our public-facing community education programs, PEP being one of those, personal emergency preparedness, where we really look at sheltering in place, making plans, communication plans, practicing those plans, important documents or things you need to be holding on to, how to prioritize for a disaster. So taking those classes, those classes are run anywhere from about 45 minutes to an hour and a half, just depending on the level of engagement. And those are really enjoyable from the feedback we get. And then also we have on here CERT trained. So CERT stands for Community Emergency Response Team. That is a more hands-on training. That's our kind of jewel of public prepare of residential preparedness or community preparedness. That is a 20-hour hands-on course, right? So we go through the information that's included in PEP. So plans, communication plans and those kind of things. We also look at how to use a fire extinguisher, the basic first aid, wound care, lift and carries, cribbing. I mean, it's a pretty thick training program, but it gets a lot of feedback. We get a lot of interest in that when we do those. We do those every quarter throughout our jurisdiction. First quarter, closest one to Castro Valley would be in Dublin. Second quarter, we're in San Leandro. Third quarter, we are in Emeryville. And fourth quarter, we do Newark and Union City. And we are working on trying to make sure we include the Castro Valley community more regularly versus kind of just when we're called. So last time we did one, we were at Castro Valley Adult School. So we do them there too. And then also our additional classes that we have are our first aid class or CPR classes. We do a hands-only CPR course. And the hands-only portion is not their certificated course that you might see through the American Red Cross. Hands-only CPR kind of stemmed from COVID, right? And just kind of minimizing the close contact and social distancing that came out of COVID, but really kind of passing the information to people so they could help to save a life until the first responder could arrive, right? So that's what we do, the hands-only CPR. And then we also have how to use a fire extinguisher courses as well as standalone courses. And that fire extinguisher course, as well as a hands-only CPR, again, about 45 minutes to about 90 minutes. So just some additional preparedness resources we have here is our fire department website and information there. We do our advertisements for our CERT academies. We do those through our fire department website. We also do that on Eventbrite. So follow us on Eventbrite. We do post a lot of events on there. Cal Fire, we have their information up here in terms of the wildland urban interface or the WUI zones. Lots of great information there. And we'll talk a little bit about what we do for defensible space. FEMA is up here because CERT is actually a national program. It's not just a local program. So if you did CERT in Oakland or in San Francisco or wherever you might find yourself, it is a national program. So you could help and know the same curriculum here in Alameda County, here in Castro Valley. The Red Cross is always a great source. Watch Duty is up there. Diablo Fire Safe Council has been a great resource for us. We've been partnering with them lately to prepare our Alameda County Wildfire Protection Plan. That group, I sit on the board there, helping to put those projects out and prioritize those projects as funding becomes available, federal funding comes out. We look at the design, we look at our wildfire protection plan in terms of identified priority projects. And then we also have on here our national community emergency response team training. So I put this slide here just to talk a little bit, just an update about the local fire severity zone maps. This is a CAL FIRE item. This is a state item. They create the maps that identify the high and very high fire severity zones across the state. Those maps changed in January after several years. So here in Castro Valley, that area modified a little bit, as well as just across the county. And those maps are scheduled to be finalized, I believe, this month. They'll be up for final decision-making. So that information is, again, on that CAL FIRE website if you want to look and see what those maps look like. They have a pretty interactive viewer on there that you can check out. So how those wildfire, those fire severity zones mapped affect Alameda County is we do our defensible space. So we run a defensible space program, and really that is free. It's a free education-based inspection program to go to the homes within the wildfire, within our high, our very high fire severity zones, and do those inspections in terms of vegetation management. So, and these, what's listed up here is zone zero, zone one, and zone two. Those are the different zones that our inspectors are looking at in front, back, side, and side of those properties in those zones. So I'll just start from zone two and work my way to zero. Zone two is at 30 to 100 feet from your building or from your structure, looking at decks, vegetation, combustible items, all those kind of things within that area. That's called our reduced fuel zone, firewood, those kind of things. That's what the inspector is looking at. Low-cut grasses, shrubs, those kind of things. In zone one, we call that the lean, clean, and green zone. So that goes from the structure to 30 feet out from the building. So again, that's looking at decking, looking at those same kind of combustible items and some of those rules and regulations that the state has identified within that line to the property. And zone zero is the latest zone, and it's not law, but it is best practice. Zone zero is their ember resistant zone, and that's the 0 to 5 from the home. So what you kind of see in kind of newer construction is really no vegetation up against the house, because really what we're looking at is that ability for fire to go from some sort of vegetation, a tree, a bush away from your house, and really walk right up to your house or to your front door. Right. So that's what we're looking to break, is that line of fire right there. Right. So that zone zero kind of looks at the vegetation. So you're not just introducing fire right up against your house. OK, not law, but best practices. So when we see homes that are really nicely manicured and nobody wants to say, oh, you got to get rid of that. Right. But we do really want to like make sure it's manicured and not too high and, you know, just really well taken care of. And that is it. That is our discussion. And if there's any questions, I can take those.
I think what we'll do here is we'll go to public comment, and then if you just hang in there, and we'll try to, any concerns or comments come in, then we'll come back up and try to address those comments. And then I don't want to get into a dialogue with people on the phone, but we can at least hear what their concerns are, and then we'll come back to the council.
Thank you.
So, okay, great. Thank you. Do we have anybody online?
I have no speakers for this item.
Okay, I'm opening the public comment. So officially, we don't have anybody in the room that wants to speak on it. Great, and we have nobody online. So I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. Sir, would you please approach the podium again? Everything you talk about has to be recorded. And I want to go down here to Councilmember Davis to see if any comments or questions. This is an informational item only. It's not a vote required on anything. So, Councilmember Davis.
Thank you very much. And it's very informative as to what you've shared with us this evening. I just need some clarification as far as defensible space. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually in a zone zero, or will be in a zone zero when it happens. But it's saying that I understand the no vegetation within 5 feet of the building, but what about fencing, gates? And then we were talking about decks. Now we have a deck that's attached to our house. Are decks going to be outlawed? Do we need to modify our decks to make them more fire resistant? How do we deal with that?
No, great question. Right. So zone zero, again, zone zero is not law, right? That is not law, but it is just best practices. Right. So in terms of fencing, you asked about fencing. See, there's a line, but so kind of the mitigating actions for defensible space and in that zone zero is home hardening. And what that is looking at what are these little things that you can do around your home to reduce the impact of a wildfire. Right. So for a fence, you might see instead of having the gate, a lot of times what we see is, you know, a fence going around the side of a house, and then they have the gate that connects from the fence to the house.
Right.
Instead of having a gate right there or having a wood gate right there, you can have a metal gate right there, right? Because we see oftentimes the fence, the fire hit the trees, hit the fence, walk along the fence, and then now it's right here at the house, and the eaves are on fire, right? Or home hardening could be 3/16 of an inch vents, mesh vents on your at your roof line, so no fine embers are getting into your vents, right? No, nothing is getting set on fire that way, right? In terms of decking, you don't want to have those combustible items on your deck if you can. We know everybody's property line doesn't extend out 100 feet, right? But for the parts that you can control, you don't want to have those kind of combustible items. So maybe like propane tanks or something like that underneath a deck, or the dried leaves accumulating underneath a deck. Those are some of the actions that we would look at within a zone zero.
So it isn't so much the deck itself, it's material that may be on or below it.
Yes. And there's other options like I'm blanking on the name of the material, but that kind of composite wood kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you. That you can use those for new decking. Of course, we know that's an expensive fix. And that's why we know that we're not pushing like fines or anything like that. We really are education based. We want to have these kind of conversations with homeowners and even neighbors. A lot of times we get calls from neighbors wanting to tell on another neighbor. Right. Or so we encourage these conversations so everyone can get in on the conversation, because we know the more homes that are protected, the better a community is protected.
And then with trees. Mm-hmm. You may have a trunk that is more than 10, 15 feet away from the house, but obviously the branches coming out over may extend and be closer to that. What would be the best approach for dealing with those?
So trees, we talk about having those limbed up, right? So we really don't want trees. So that transfer of fire, so from the ground, thinking fires walking along the grass, then it catches a hedge, then the hedge catches these low-hanging tree branches. Now the tree's on fire. Now we got embers blowing all over the neighborhood.
Right.
Right. So with trees, we really ask for trees just to be limbed up about 6 feet off the ground. Okay. And if there's any shrubs underneath them, then just double that height off the ground. Right. And then in terms of the structure, we don't want limbs overhanging the roof, right? Because we don't want that fire to drop down onto your roof and now your gutters are burning.
Right.
That's another piece, is cleaning out the gutters, making sure we don't have any old debris in the gutters. Just really about just not letting fire get the easy path right up to your home.
Thank you. That answers my questions.
Councilmember Thomas.
Hey, I like this microphone. It moves.
Can't take it home.
I can't. Sir, thank you for being here. Excellent presentation. Thank you so much. You know, PG&E and sometimes Amber Alert comes through immediately. We all get these pings on the phone. Hey, there's a fire coming through. There's a fire coming through. PG&E says, you know, we may shut down your power.
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible from you guys? Just get a warning, like, you know, on our phone, like how they do it. You see what I'm asking?
Yeah. So if it's an actual fire, or are you talking maybe potentially?
Potential, yeah.
Potential. Well, the way we would do evacuation management, we could put an advisory, but that would be an actual fire on the ground, right?
Okay.
So let's say a fire was burning and you're in the neighboring zone, we could turn that to advisory,
okay.
Right? But that's where we push like the AC alerts. Because that may come out, we Pulse Point would notify, right? So there are those several different ways, but we don't necessarily put it out like PG&E does with like the 24 hours or 48 hour notice.
Yeah,
cut the power off. So yeah, we don't do that. The equivalent to that for us would be like a red flag day.
Okay.
Right. And so that's where we're putting the red flags up at our stations. And that means high fire weather, high winds, high temperature, low humidity. Right. So that's where we're kind of educating the public in terms of watching the activities that they do because there's a high fire danger today.
Okay. And that's what you were saying, that if you sign up for a pulse point or watch duty, they will give the warnings out, right?
Yes. That's where you'll see some of those warnings.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move across the room to Councilmember Davini.
Thanks for the presentation. Mm-hmm. Emergency preparedness. The LA area had a big water supply issue. Mm-hmm. What kind of redundancy do we have to check on your water supply? East Bay Mud is going to be the provider of it. Mm-hmm. Does the fire department have their own emergency preparedness to make sure that we don't have that same a circumstance where the hydrants are dry when the trucks roll in?
Well, I can't speak towards the water and the hydrants portion of it because that's kind of managed through whoever the locale is at that, where that incident may be.
Right.
But we do come prepared with our own resources in terms of the fire department, right? So, and we also have We also have mutual aid, automatic mutual aid, right? And that is where we might have resources. So if we found ourselves tapped out in our own resources, it's already built in that we have agreements with neighboring jurisdictions that will come and support. So, yeah. And those could come from the north, from the south, whichever is the easiest way in, but we do come prepared.
Okay. When you talk about defensible space, I live out in Crow Canyon, mm-hmm. Have 50 acres out there, huge pastures and fields. I run livestock, so I do my best to keep the grazing down. Livestock isn't easy. You have to have good fences. You have to have management. Yeah. It's a nice way to control the fire risk. Mowing is out of the question for a lot of our lots because they're so doggone steep.
Yeah.
Are you aware of the fire department having any standards? I mean, I would hate to impose a standard on some of our neighbors that can't run livestock or mowing, but on the other hand, I don't want to be next door to them when their grass is 3 feet high in October with the winds coming up.
Yeah.
So are there standards for field management, not necessarily yard management?
That's a great question. I don't have a very detailed answer for that. For really, from the preparedness perspective, we're looking at home. If they're falling within those high fire severity zones, then that's a mechanism that we have. If they're not in there, a lot of times they're getting referred to the county code enforcement to push those kind of measures that you're referring to.
That might be an agenda item for another fire department presentation. And the same would go for forest management. You know, again, in all the after action mm-hmm. reports, you say there was poor forest management.
Yeah.
Well, a portion of my lot is heavily forested. So Crow Canyon, Palomares Canyon, the north side of Redwood Road, Columbia subdivision, all of these subdivisions are surrounded by forests. Frankly, I don't know how to even maintain my own. It's not timber. It's not harvestable or anything like that. But it's dense.
Yes.
And if it was ablaze, I don't know how would put it out. So again, that might be a subject for future.
No, that's a great question. I'm actually,
future meeting.
I'm glad you brought that up. That gives me opportunity to plug our Fuels Crew 8. We have a relatively new, they've been around about a year now, fuels management, fuels crew type one, type two. We have our fuels crew, but they do those kind of projects around the county, right? So they were originally grant funded through the California Coastal Conservancy, right? They got some seed money to start that program. That's about a 15 person crew. And they are available to take on projects around the county. And they are taking on projects around the county to do some of that stuff, exactly what you're talking about, right? Some of those larger areas that need to be taken care of, right? They also are working to get MOUs and agreements with other the other large landholders around the county. So like East Bay Mud, East Bay Regional, Hayward Area Recreational District, some of those larger landholders around the county. To do some of that vegetation management for those large properties like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what the answer is, what the solution is. Again, we don't have timber stands, but I know if any of our forested area did catch on fire, the after action is going to be we didn't do forest management. And as I said, I wouldn't know how to even maintain my own.
Of the apps, which one do you like best?
I know I like that.
I mean, well, between PulsePoint and WatchDuty.
You know what? Honestly, I look at them both, right? Because PulsePoint is more like internally for us, because I'm not on the operation side, so I'm not necessarily getting the calls when all the crews are going out. So I'll get my updates that way. But then WatchDuty will also have all the pictures up from the hillside cameras all in one space. So I don't have to like go to these different websites and like, let me see the camera over here. Let me see the wind direction off of this one. WatchDuty is putting all that stuff in one spot and making it really easy to follow. And they're updating pretty frequently as well.
Good. And then the last question that I have is, you said that the new maps were scheduled for county approval this month.
Yes.
And I would imagine that's kind of a mixed blessing. I mean, if your area were to be upgraded to a higher risk zone, you're getting extra attention, but now you're not going to get insurance, fire insurance. Who's in charge of approving those maps?
So that would rest with the board.
Say it again?
With the Board of Supervisors.
And who's preparing the maps? Is that Cal Fire?
Cal Fire. Cal Fire is preparing those maps.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we had any feedback on that or any presentation on that as to on a local level?
Not yet.
It's June of 25. Here we are. Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Yes. Deputy Chief.
Deputy Chief Thomas.
Hi. How are you? Deputy Chief Thomas with ACFD. Just on reference of the LRA maps, those maps are generated by the state, Cal Fire. And just to kind of give a brief history, I think it's the maps that are upgraded every 5 years. And I know we have your medium, high, and very high. And that's kind of what generates the areas based on your location. And they look at a 50-year burn pattern in addition to fuel, weather, and topography, and ember casting, what emergency manager Lincoln Cashmere was covering about the latter fuels. But right now at the county, we think we're scheduled for the second reading of the adoption of the LRA maps coming up within the next 2 weeks, give or take. Then all our contract cities as well, each city that's within a LRA, local response area, they have to adopt the maps as well. And this came out earlier this year, which they had roughly 180 days to adopt the map. The first 30 days they posted on their city or county website. Then they have it open for public comment. Then we do the first and second read. Then within that timeline, we have to adopt the LRA maps. If that brings any clarity to your question, hopefully.
So it's very late in the game at this point, if it's already up for its second reading.
But yes. Done.
Okay. Councilmember Favorite.
Yeah, regarding those maps, thank you for answering that. And great presentation, by the way, and very informative. Really did a great job. I'm a real estate broker, and you know, we look at the, you know, there's sometimes inspections that we have to go do. Mm-hmm. Have you guys come out and do the inspection that, you know, I usually would go along with. Mm-hmm. Other properties are in the zone or not in the zone. And it's a little confusing to me. I mean, when someone from the fire department comes out and we walk through, that's helpful. You know, usually it's this lightweight stuff, like you were talking about, shrub under a tree or branches of a tree near a fence that aren't, I guess, mandatory that we cut them mm-hmm. for the sale, but is recommended, which we'd always do. Mm-hmm. But the other areas I think that is confusing is like a property I sold up in the Palomares home division, not the canyon. Mm-hmm. When I was talking to the fire person, he's like, you know, I don't even know why this is in the map or in the fire zone is high, because all I see is cement. I don't see nothing. You know, it's new construction, small shrubbery, small trees. He was baffled. And then, you know, I go to another area, sell a property up on Fairview, and there's trees and shrubs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I sold it to a fire guy. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is definitely in the fire zone. You know, we're going to probably have an inspection, and you know, you're going to have a tough time getting insurance. We got people who do insurance. And he came back and goes, I checked several times. I'm not in the fire zone. I'm like, how does that happen? You know, so any kind of feedback in regards to those, that confusion that I have?
Well, honestly, we had a little bit of confusion ourselves when the maps were updated. And like you said, it is kind of like that double-edged sword of, you know, you get decreased fire danger and, hey, maybe I can get insurance, but I'm still at risk, right? So, but unfortunately, we don't control those maps. And what Chief Thomas was saying, CAL FIRE is looking at that kind of 50-year history and burn patterns when they predict out with those maps. But what we did see was that they shrunk a lot of the zones, right? So, and we were expecting the exact opposite, but they shrunk the zones down a lot more. Mm-hmm. But what ACFD is doing is continuing to provide those inspections, even though they're not required, but because we are taking that education approach, right? Yeah. So we're hoping to kind of clear up some of that confusion. We put together some presentations and are available to come and speak to realtor groups or residents or whoever it may be about the defensible space to help try to clear that up. Yeah. But yeah, unfortunately, we don't control that part of it, okay, right? We just have to kind of educate around it.
Yeah. Yes, and I knew you didn't control it. I was just curious how it got there. It seems like the last maps were more accurate, and these have some flaws in it.
The previous map for Alameda County had a little over 3,000 homes in the high fire severity zone.
Mm-hmm.
The current maps for the county, I want to say, are around like 1,300.
Oh, wow. So it went down quite a bit. Yeah, a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's informative too. So thank you. Great job.
Mm-hmm. Vice Chair Mogret.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you so much for the presentation and for all you and the department does to keep our community safe and healthy. You guys are awesome. Couple of questions. And I'm sorry if I missed it, but how does ACFD publicize the PEP and CERT training? How and where? I mean, most people don't get up in the morning and say, oh, I'm going to go check out and see what I can do in case of an emergency. How do I, as a member of the public, learn about this?
So we'll put some of them on Eventbrite. Okay. We'll put some out through social media. A lot of the times our classes are requested, right? So we'll come out to a homeowners group or a school or a quarterly meeting or whatever somebody may, whatever agency mm-hmm. might be having. We do a lot for our cities, but right now it is kind of set up as a call us and we'll come out to you. So we can do a better, we can take a better approach in terms of advertising those. We recently got some staff this year, so we can really start rolling those out a little bit more frequently. And they are ticking up, but we could definitely do more. So if somebody is interested, you can go on our website and just hit like the interest link mm-hmm. or just give us a call and it'll land with one of us.
Might suggest the county library system as a place.
I will make sure we get some flyers over here.
There you go. All right. Thank you. And second question, the notification resources are awesome. But they assume cell service, Wi-Fi, internet connection. What if, you know, what's the resource available to the community other than, you know, AM 1610 if something happens and I don't have cell service and I don't have access to the internet? What do I do?
Yeah, that is a challenge. We see that especially in our unincorporated areas of the county. Unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for that, right? Because it is based on cell service. That's why we try to cast that wide net in terms of the number of apps and number of different ways that we put the information out. And hopefully at that moment that you enter that zone or when that your signal comes through for that second, it'll ping. But yeah, there is no good answer for that if there is no cell service. What we saw in Berkeley, at one point we were looking at what Berkeley had did was they had revamped all those towers. Mm-hmm. All their emergency notification towers. It's a great system. You can speak live through the system. You know, some of their police cars can turn into a mobile speaker system. And it's a great system, but it always comes down to cost, right?
So
those towers are pretty expensive. I did a cost estimate for the ones in Sunol, and it was around like $10 million a tower, right? So it does get real expensive to try to put, you know, broadband in areas where it doesn't exist.
Cool. Thank you. Last question. in the activated zone scenario that you presented under a unified command situation. No surprise, Alameda County Sheriffs, they've lost so much of their emergency, Office of Emergency Services capabilities. Has that had any impact on how you work with them, integrate with them to prepare and plan for these eventualities?
No, we have a great relationship with the Sheriff's Office. We stay in constant communication with them. Myself, I go over there once a week just to keep up and make sure we know who each other are, who to call should an incident happen. We're seeing their staff go back up, which is great, right? They had went down for a little while. They had a small team to begin with.
Yeah.
And then they went down with a lot of retirements. But I know that they are starting to hire over there. I know their emergency manager has hired, I think, at least 4 new people over there now. So we're starting to see a lot more engagement and more involvement with them.
Okay.
So
good news.
Relationship is great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks all, Mr. Chair.
Wait, what's this thing? Okay. I have quite a few questions, and I was really pushing hard to get you guys here. One is, I live in the Canyonlands. We have multiple canyons in the unincorporated area that are dead ends. And I was wondering, have you guys done any kind of survey and to find out what the reception would be in the different areas of the canyons? I ask this question largely because the cell tower folks are regularly coming in for conditional use permits to renew. And if we knew where they did not have reception that would be important to an emergency situation, we may have a little bit of leverage in asking them to get a broader coverage in these areas. So I would ask that somehow that the department figure out where those zones are so that if there's anything that we can do from this end, we can try to improve the service.
No, I like that. That's a great suggestion in terms of identifying where those zones are. So yeah, exactly. I like that.
When you guys send out an emergency, do you have something like an Amber Alert that you could put in play for the areas that would be affected? In the urban area, it's relatively easy to, you hear a fire truck coming, but the only thing that we see in the rural area is we smell the smoke. And usually it's because the wind is blowing from west to east. And it would be great if, along with that, that cell tower reception that we could improve on, we could do that, some kind of an Amber Alert, so it just immediately lights up. I know Union City often sends out emergency alerts. I get them all the time. This road's blocked. We have enough crime here or something going on. That would be helpful. If you guys are doing controlled burns or anything like that, it would be helpful in the rural area for us to know ahead of time so that when we smell that smoke, we're not getting our horses and cattle in a trailer to get them out.
Yes.
So if we could do that, that would be very helpful. Do we have a plan that, or do you televise or put out a plan where people would go with their animals? I happen to be on the fair board. I know that we in the past have worked with the community, but not everybody knows in the community there's this fire. You know, can we get some kind of a... an alert list going where one rancher called the other rancher something. Can you guys help us with doing something like that to where we could help each other?
Yeah, I like that. That's something that we could raise at. So I sit on our Alameda County Emergency Managers Association meeting, and that is a quarterly meeting. That is something I could raise there, definitely. I know the Sheriff's Office and the Office of Emergency Services manages those shelters for the animals, for the large animals. So I couldn't tell you exactly where those are, but I know that they do have a plan for that. But I can definitely raise that. I like the idea of a phone tree or some other kind of networking that residents could take up and stay informed.
Right. I think in the past at the Alameda County Fairgrounds, we've worked with it, but there's been a fair amount of changes with the horse racing leaving and things like that. I think it'd be really important if we could communicate with the ranchers. I mean, we really cherish our agricultural property in the county, to a point where we give them tons of guidelines of what they can and cannot do, it would be very nice to, you know, reach out to them with some help if they needed it. That would be one, and a phone tree with a contact list. And I don't know if you know, but these maps are crucially important that they're developing, mm-hmm. because most of us in the Canyonlands had our insurance canceled last year, and we had to go to the state plan. And I don't know if you know, but most of the insurance policies that I know of, like mine, went from 4,000 to 22,000. You know, that's pretty substantial and pretty important. So these maps are doggone important to us. And then it would be nice if we had some input with CAL FIRE, because I didn't realize they were the ones drafting the maps, mm-hmm. so that we could at least give some input. I mean, I can't remember in the east end of Crow Canyon ever seeing a fire. But yet it's in a, I guarantee you, a high-risk fire zone.
Yeah.
I have never in 20 years seen CAL FIRE on the property or even come by and knock on the door and say, do you have any ponds on your property? Can we draft water from them? Can, you know, I mean, so we need to somehow or another.
That's actually the project that we were looking to take up, is kind of map those water tenders that may be on private property, that may be a resource that we can tap into. We know a lot of that information is kind of historical knowledge, right? Like a captain at any particular station might be the one that knows about that, and just kind of a word of mouth thing. But we really want to kind of document that so we can have those resources identified should we need them. So
I remember when Dave McDonald took over, that was, he had a couple of guys calling around and they were checking on it, mm-hmm. from Alameda County Fire. Mm-hmm. But most of the rural fires are going to be often fought by CAL FIRE. Mm-hmm. So, you know, once again, if we could get CAL FIRE to participate a little bit. Another concern I have is when you drive through the canyon, most of the hydrants have the donuts on them. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
And I think they're afraid of somebody stealing water. But yet the hydrants were put through the canyon, mm-hmm. for a reason, for fires. So if a rancher had a water wagon or had an option to hook to a fire hydrant there quickly, he could probably fight that fire for a bit of time. But unless he's got a special tool to get that donut off, mm-hmm. you know, by the time you guys get there, the place is going to be on serious fire.
Yes.
So I think we need to work on with East Bay Mud or whoever makes that decision. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't do any good to have a fire hydrant that you can't use. You have to wait for the fire department.
Yeah, you're raising some great ideas in terms of collaboration between community and fire. So I appreciate that. Keep them coming.
Let's see. I think that's the majority of kind of my comments. I'm really concerned about the dead end canyons. How do we get people out of them quickly? And how do we get the animals out? And notification would be a great way of letting people know. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that we can find out of some of these things? Would you come back at some point in time and talk to us about them?
Sure. Definitely. I could definitely come back and speak about those.
That'd be great. I appreciate that. Do we have any more questions from the council? Yes, ma'am. You have to go to the podium. Everything has to be recorded. Thank you. And if you just state your name and.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Hurd. I'm the public affairs manager for the Alameda County Fire Department. I work along with Lincoln, and I'm here for his support group. And I was writing down some things. There are a lot of hard questions, and you brought up some really good questions, like Lincoln said. But I was writing down some things that I can get involved in, and that would be the alert and how do you get the word out to people in the canyons and things like that. That's my job. And when you talk about flyers and bringing it to the library, I'm kind of old school, new school. Old school meaning bring a flyer. So I'm thinking, ooh, I can bring a flyer and I can put it to the library. Or new school, when you guys ask, how do you get this information? And I do the, I manage the Instagram and Facebook. Do you guys have Instagram or Facebook? Those two things I manage. And so when there's high fire danger, red flag and all that stuff. I'm on this phone making sure people know that. So that's a small way that I contribute to that. But the bigger way that you guys are talking about, like getting the animal somewhere and having a plan, those small things, I can, you know, start a campaign along with Lincoln to, you know, we can just start small and maybe it'll get bigger and bigger. Some of the other things we just don't have control over. I don't want to put anybody under the bus, but we do have a good relationship with CAL FIRE. Maybe we can start working closely or closer with them to try and do better.
Yeah, I mean, if we had a simple list like, Chuck, how many horse trailers do you have? How many horses can you move? You know what I mean? And then that be shared with the fire department. So when there was an emergency, they could make a phone call quickly and say, how many horses can you move?
Well, Chuck Moore, I have your name down here. Yeah. And I think that you're going to be my horse guy. And so maybe later on, I can get in touch with you and we can start something like that. It won't be overnight and it won't be easy, but at least we can start somewhere.
Yeah, I think preparedness is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, so I'll participate anywhere we can, you know. To have a program so we don't have a disaster like they had in L.A. would be wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you guys for coming.
Chief Deputy Thomas.
Yes, thank you. There's a local organization as well. Called Hold Your Horses, and they're based out of Contra Costa County, and we have utilized them in the past on some fires on the east zone of Alameda County. And I can send Chuck, I can send you the email, but the number, I'll just email you the information or have Chief Lukey send it to you. But that's one local company that can provide some assistance with livestock emergency evacuation response team. That's local and highly supportive if necessary.
My hearing is horrible, so I was kind of gurgled for me a little bit. What did I hear?
There's an organization that's locally called Hold Your Horses, and they're based out of Contra Costa County. But we have utilized their services before on fires that we have had on the east zone of Alameda County. And I can have Chief Lukey send that information over to you via email. So that's something that you can share with the local ranchers as well via text message or email. And that's at least a start. If something happens in between now and then, at least we do have some type of organization that's available that can provide some assistance to your livestock.
Boy, it's disheartening to find out that Contra Costa County has something we don't.
Yeah, they serve multiple counties, but it is on a voluntary basis, and they have the facilities to house livestock. So it's not Contra Costa Fire or on a public entity. It's more driven by volunteers.
Yeah, I understand. I just don't like being second at anything. So I want to be first and the best. So we need to figure out a way to work on this within our county. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And we could certainly share as much help as we could get. When there's a disaster, is always well accepted and appreciated. And saving lives and animal lives is pretty important to us. Any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to our next meeting so that we can maybe reach out to the community with some of these ideas and make it better, or at least feel better anyway about it. And maybe the insurance company will pay attention to what we're doing and lighten up on us.
Hopefully. We keep our fingers crossed for that one.
Yeah. Don't hold my breath, huh? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this portion of the meeting. And the next item on the agenda, chair and the vice chair elections. What I was going to do is somebody asked me, what does the chair and the vice chair are kind of responsible for doing? And so I'll just give you a quick note on what I do know about it so far, is you do the planning with the agendas. You work with the planning department and also with staff on those agendas. You'll about once a month have a meeting with the supervisor in your district, your area here, regarding those agendas. You're expected to have follow-ups on different things that come about. You'll often do site visits before the meeting to look at an item that's going to come up on the agenda. And then you're responsible for running an effective meeting. So that's pretty much the outline. And there's in our rules of operation, there those outlined areas are there. So, you know, it's pretty easy to spot. What I'd like to do is we've never done this before, but I'm going to go ahead and open it up for public comment before we have a nomination and a vote, if that's okay. So do we have anybody in the room that would like to comment on this item on the agenda, which is the election of the chair and the vice chair? It is an action item.
I have no speakers for this item.
You have no speakers and no speakers in the room, so I am going to close public comment. And go ahead and look for a nomination from the group for chair, and then we'll vote, and we'll have a vice chair nomination and vote.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to nominate Chuck Moore, our current chair, to serve his second year as chair. I think you've done a great job getting the council focused, coordinating with staff, and I think that's deserving of a second year to see your term out.
I'll second that.
Okay. Well, I'll accept the nomination. So can we go ahead and have a roll call and a vote?
Can we have discussion on that?
Pardon me?
Discussion.
Can we have discussion on that before we vote?
Yes, we can have discussion on that.
I just want to say nice things about you, Chuck. I fully support the nomination. With that being said, I am very impressed with this entire board, and I think that several other people could be chair and vice chair, and if they wanted to step forward, that they should be bold enough to do so. But I think Chuck and Bill are excellent leadership for this board. They have the gravitas, they have the experience. More importantly, they have the relationship with the supervisor, and that's really important in setting agendas and in seeing through our objectives. So without suggesting that nobody else could be in those positions, I like those two guys. So I'm addressing both the chair and the vice chair in my comments.
Well, let's take the chair first, and then we're going to go to the vice chair next. And do we have any more comment?
I just want to add, people say we get paid a lot. We don't get paid anything to sit here and volunteer and make decisions. So I just want to add that to the comments, because we get comments from everywhere. Hey, you guys get paid. You guys do this. No. The chair and the vice chair especially work hard. And all those statements, what he does is hard work, working with the planning, working with the staff, and making decisions, making meetings come through. It's tough work. And, you know, it's just, Chuck and Bill do it for Cache Valley. They love Cache Valley.
Yeah, I don't. Do we have any more comments? Okay, let's have a vote.
Councilmember Davis.
Aye.
Councilmember Davini.
Aye.
Councilmember Fiebig.
Aye.
Councilmember Thomas.
Yes.
Councilmember Mulgrew.
Aye.
Councilmember Moore.
Yes, thank you.
Approved.
Thank you. Okay, now the position of vice chair.
I nominate Bill to be the vice chair for one more year.
I'll second that. And I second it with...
Okay, we have a first and a second, yeah. So I don't make the same mistake again. Let's have any discussion. No discussion?
I sort of echo Dan's earlier remarks that there are a lot of fresh faces on this board, and I think that... your guys' leadership over the last year will help us through this next year as well. So that's why I'm supporting this motion.
Thank you. And I will say that as a chair and a vice chair, that Chair Mulgrew Vice Chair Mulgrey has been absolutely outstanding supporter and very helpful to me as a chair. So thank you. Let's go ahead and have a vote on this.
Member Davis.
Aye.
Council Member Davini.
Aye.
Council Member Fiebig.
Aye.
Council Member Thomas.
Yes.
Council Member Mulgrew.
Aye.
Council Member Moore.
Yes.
Approved.
Thank you. So we have next year's vice chair and chair squared away. Next item on the agenda are the chair reports. And let's see. Let's go to council comments. Anything in the council? Davini, did you have anything?
No, if you'd like, I can give an update on the sidewalk bending subcommittee.
Yeah, it's council comments.
Or we can wait till the next meeting.
I think it's okay to have this meeting.
Okay.
Comments, go ahead.
Good. I have quite a few of them, but I'll try to run through them really quick. So the ordinance has been pushed to the next level. It went in front of the Unincorporated Services Committee on May 28th. And boy, has that ordinance evolved since it first came to us. They've done a really good job of defining all the items. They've come up with licensing requirements, a bunch of distance rules, from curbs, from other establishments, signage limitations, fines, penalties. They have not yet set a fee schedule, but that's something that they're going to do. It's going before the full board of supervisors on July 10th. I frankly don't think there's any work for the subcommittee or for us to do before that, because things really aren't going to happen until the ordinance is passed. A lot of the conversation at the meeting centered around enforcement. And I don't know if you guys recall, but I think we pointed out the oddity that code enforcement is kind of in charge of this program, but they historically only worked on private property. So it is an evolution. I believe Supervisor Miley and Tam understood that. I spoke at the meeting suggesting that we really need code enforcement to be the lead agency and to use the sheriff's office and the environmental health department as needed to help with the overall administration of the program. And I'm hoping that will carry through. I've written to Mel Speed, attended the meeting. He talked about some of the issues as it relates to some of our public gatherings and our events, the licensing requirements. I followed up after that meeting, inviting both Valerie Struthers from Environmental Health and Ed from Code Enforcement to have future meetings. They were both very, very open to that, and I think enthusiastic about it. So I don't know if Ashley or Tona have any comments on the evolution of the,
Let's stick to council point. Comments first.
Okay. So that's the update.
Any of the council comments?
I have a question for Council Member Davini. Was there any discussion at Unincorporated Services about adding resources to code enforcement, given their not being available on nights and weekends and being stretched in general? Because this is going to be a load for them, I think.
That was definitely discussed. There wasn't a commitment made by the supervisors there, but I think there was clear acknowledgement that right now, code enforcement is not set up to do this on public property nights and weekends.
Thank you for your good work.
Any other comments?
Yes, I just have one. I was glad to see that the Somerset project is underway, under construction. My only suggestion to Public Works is they put a changeable message sign indicating the project and the duration of the project, and they said it just east of Stanton. I think it'd be more effective if it was just east of Chabot Road, Lake Chabot, because there are more people obviously there to would be able to see and have a better understanding as to what's going on. That's end of my comments.
Any other council comments?
Just wanted to add the sidewalk vendor that was on the Safeway parking lot. Safeway on Redwood Road and
Cashwell. Joe, I'm going to, sorry for the interruption. Since this isn't on the agenda, we caution you for having further discussion. Okay.
I understand. I just want to make sure this is council comments and not representative of any meeting that the council's been at. This is just up asking for any comments from the council. So we're, this is not to be voted on. It's not an action item. We're just looking for if anybody has any comments about what's going on. So I think that's appropriate.
Just be cautious of your discussion since Thank it's you. Not on the agenda.
Thank you. I understand that. So everybody got it? Good.
I'll pass on it. I'll talk about it next week.
Okay. Are we done with council comments? Let's move on to staff comments. Do we have any staff comments?
None for me, thank you.
Nothing for me.
No staff comments, doggone. Okay, I just want to say as a council comment, we have a Alameda County Fair going on. I've been out there 2 days and it's absolutely outstanding. I hope everybody here has an opportunity to go and please visit the farm. The farm is very important to the future of our young people in our community. So anyway, without anything else, I am going to adjourn the meeting and it is at 7:14. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Done, Mr. Chair. Thank you guys for your support.